Hello, good morning and welcome. Evelyn O'Rourke here, sitting in for Sinead Mooney for this week on Playback. So, what do we have on the menu for you today? Sorry, I shouldn't be mentioning menus. They're a sensitive topic this week as the hospitality industry grapples with the ongoing fallout from the pause on reopening bars and cafes.
All options were discussed last Monday, but because of the NPHET recommendation to government in their letter in order to allow indoor hospitality, the options are very narrow for us.
Adrian Cummins, CEO of the Restaurants Association of Ireland on Thursday's Morning Ireland. And we'll hear more from those discussions later. But also coming up in the programme, we'll be hearing about home, heroes and mental health, as I tried to give your Saturday morning a well-earned shot in the arm.
One pharmacy I called, I had to call 46 times.
Oh dear, you would think these phrases would be, you know, as safe as houses.
It amounts to a carte blanche to these large institutions to purchase homes.
Right. Best just to keep it simple. And with the talk of fourth waves and the Delta variant and case numbers rising, even when the sun shines, there's definitely a little chill in the air. As anybody who has sat outside at a restaurant or a cafe can tell you, it brings a new meaning to the term BYOB, bring your own blanket. But this week has been no picnic for those in the hospitality industry as they battle to salvage what's left of the summer season.
Well, it looks as though the 26th of July is now going to be the day that indoor hospitality will open up in Ireland.
Áine Lawler spoke to Pádraig Cribben on Friday morning's Morning Ireland to get the update.
The Oireachtas will have to pass new laws next week, so it's legal that only fully vaccinated customers will be allowed indoors from then. Pádraig Cribben is Chief Executive with the Vintners Federation of Ireland. Pádraig Cribben, are you happy with the direction of the talks, you know, around the vaccine passport, and we'll have new laws that will allow indoor dining from the 26th?
It wouldn't be true to say, Áine, that we're happy. I mean, we had a preferred option, which was to go with the protocols that were in place last year. But it became apparent in the discussions with senior officials in government that it was either this option, which we believe still has a fair level of unfairness about it. We were very concerned about the legal aspect. It now appears as if that is going to be addressed. And we also believe that with political will, if the political will is there, the 19th is still doable if government have the will to make it happen. And every day, every week is very important at this time of the year, particularly in those tourist areas that are dependent on a good summer season to see them through the winter.
Pádraig Cribben there. And then on Thursday's News at One, Ruth Andrews, the CEO of the Inbound Tour Operators Association, spoke to Brian Dobson about her sector's concerns.
We don't expect that there's going to be a bonanza in terms of inbound tourism into Ireland.
I think it's something like half your business or the business of the companies you represent comes from North America, and it's not obviously included in this COVID cert. What are you saying to potential North American customers when they say, is Ireland open for business?
We're able to say that, yes, we understand that we are open for business, but we have not been able to give them the clarity that they need right now. So really, we're seeing a lot of our international US visitors certainly still anxious to come here in September, looking for that clarity. We're scrambling very hard to try and provide that to them, to hold on to what will possibly only be at best 10% of 2019 business. So these are businesses that are very much still in survival. No real recovery is anticipated until March 2022. And these businesses have a significant pipeline of business for 2022 that they want to be here to actually deliver to all of the tourism and hospitality businesses.
And in relation to indoor hospitality, are you saying that as far as your industry is concerned, really the opening up of the country and the opening up of indoor hospitality should go hand in hand?
Absolutely. It's a key component of the visitor experience here. And certainly in Ireland, we all know one can't guarantee the same level of outdoor dining experiences that other destinations that we compete with will. So it is a key factor in people's consideration.
Ruth Andrews there. BYOB. Anyway, so as the hospitality industry begins to make its plans, right at the heart of all this is one word, vaccines. And while the vaccine rollout is going at a pace with confirmation that 2 million people have now been fully vaccinated, last week, the young people were given the go-ahead to get their vaccines.
First in the door was Glenn.
And Brian O'Connell managed to track down one very happy young man in Cork from Monday's Today with Claire Byrne.
And we chatted as he got his one-shot Janssen vaccine.
So what we'll do is we'll just get the area ready first. We'll just wipe with an alcohol wipe and then just inject over 2 seconds and you're done and dusted.
Perfect.
Okay, you have to stay for 15 minutes after to make sure you don't react to it. But other than that, you'll be good to go and you're fully vaccinated.
How do you feel about getting the job?
Oh yeah, I'm delighted to get it. I was the last of my family to get it, so, you know, I'm done and dusted now. Just one job and I'm done. So I rang on Friday there to try to get an appointment, and I was after getting a slot there for Monday morning, so I'm delighted.
You can choose this vaccine, so you were happy enough to choose it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Just the one job, like, you know, you're done, so it's over and done with now.
What difference will it make to your life, do you think?
You know, just kind of being able to do regular stuff, like, you know, so back to normal, really, like, you know. Getting on the plane now and even kind of, you know, just eating inside in restaurants and stuff like that, you know, just kind of making life a bit more normal, like, you know, so happy out.
And amongst your peer group, amongst your friends, do you think there's huge demand for it?
Oh yeah, all my friends, they're looking to get it done, like, you know, so they're all on the list waiting to go, like, you know, so everyone's delighted to be getting it in my group anyway.
How's the arm?
Feels good, yeah, perfect. You wouldn't even notice, yeah.
Great stuff. So you have to sit here for 15 minutes now just for observation.
You know, 15 minutes now and I'm done and hopefully back to normal after that.
So that's Glenn, and I can tell you he skipped out the door after that 15 minutes, Claire.
For Fergal Keane and Drive Time, no great luck for his customers as they outline their attempts to try to get their hands on the vaccines.
You're trying to get a vaccine, any luck?
No, and I expected it because I knew that obviously for my generation, from 18 to 24, we all want to get out and get everything back up and running, but we have been so contained for so long that everyone's just dying to get a hold of a vaccine. Yeah.
You're trying to register for your vaccine. How's it been?
Yeah, so I looked on the website. I found there's not very many in Dublin, actually, that are there. So I tried to ring a few and they rang out or I couldn't get through. So you could tell lots of people are trying to ring in. So I've come into Macaulay's here and they're saying you can register online. They're out of stock already, so they're waiting to be restocked. So, I mean, it's a light at the end of the tunnel. It seems to be a bit of an enigma at the same time.
Difficult enough. Anyone I've rang seems to say the lines are busy.
Any idea how long it's going to take you?
I was told in the next 2 weeks. Who knows? I've got stuff to do that I need to be vaccinated for, so fingers crossed to get it before then.
Meanwhile, earlier that day on Monday morning, Naomi Long, leader of the Alliance Party and Justice Minister at Stormont, spoke to Rachel English.
The meeting came at a sensitive time with concerns that some loyalists may use the 12th of July commemorations to stoke tensions. Not for the first time, election posters from Sinn Féin, the SDLP and the Alliance Party have been put on bonfires. The Ulster Unionist leader Doug Beattie said the burning of flags and posters was not an expression of unionist culture.
Naomi spoke to Rachel about what her experiences had been like seeing her poster used in this way.
Do you find it intimidating?
I've seen my poster on a number of bonfires. It's not a pleasant experience. I mean, I have, as you know, had previous experience of, you know, my office being subject to arson attack. So it's hard to, I suppose, disentangle the emotions that you feel about your office being attacked, death threats that you receive, and then seeing your image being burned on bonfire. So yes, it is intimidating. It's a chilling thing to see and it's an uncomfortable thing. And I think whilst people will dismiss it and say, well, it's just a poster, it doesn't matter. Actually, it's a very aggressive act to burn someone's image. It's clearly hate fueled, and I think it has a very chilling effect on those who have to go through it. I think that it's important that the entire community are clear that it's not acceptable for these things to be burned. I think it does real harm to the loyalist community as well, because it undermines actually their argument that this is about expressing culture and history. And let's not use this as an opportunity to stoke hate and tension.
Naomi Long there. And other politicians too were speaking out this week about issues that affected them.
I'm old enough to know that there are very few women my age who have not been subjected to some form of sexual assault in their respective lifetimes. And I know this because I'm one of them. It won't come as a surprise to those of us of a similar age who have suffered this trauma. And sometimes we have suffered it more than once. It was and is a lot more common than many believe. And I always take statistics that I read with a pinch of salt. Most victims do not report their crimes. There are many reasons for this. Shame, a fear of judgment, and a desire to forget are among the reasons, and it shouldn't be this way. It is a corrosive blight on female safety and morale. Las Ciancuorla, you know too well that many of the 36 women TDs and 18 senators may disagree in terms of ideology and policy, but on a completely personal and human level, we will all agree on one thing. We are all very much a part of the unfinished democracy that is Ireland when it comes to the representation and treatment of women.
Nolene Blackwell is the director of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. She's with us in studio this morning. How significant do you think that statement was?
It's a very important statement, Rachel, because what it is doing is having one of our leaders in the country recognise publicly and in a very personal way that this is an issue that's a huge problem in our country, and that so much of it goes unnoticed and unknown, partly because it was hidden. And until we get to the point where that's a common understanding, we won't be able to properly address the issue of sexual violence, all the ways in which people are hurt.
Nolene Blackwell there on Morning Ireland. But just wait a minute. How many women TDs did you see from Madigan mention were in the Dáil? On Friday evening, Senator Vanna Batchick looks set to boost that number of TDs in the House.
Well, we're returning now to the RDS Kent Centre.
She spoke to Sarah McInerney on Drive Time.
And the Dublin Bay South by-election, and we're joined by Labour's Ivana Batchick. Ivana, there hasn't been a declaration yet, but it seems certain you will win the seat. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Sarah. As you said, there's no declaration yet, but I'm just so overwhelmed and over the moon at the level of support. Really grateful to the people here in Dublin Bay South in my home constituency, and so grateful to all of the many, many people from Labour and from outside the party too who campaigned with me and supported me so much over the past few weeks. Really, really just so honoured.
Ivana Batchick there speaking to Sarah McInerney on Drive Time. So for the political anoraks, it's been a great week following the by-election. But for many others, it's very hard to get them talking about anything except for Love Island.
I think it should be really called Fake Island, because the girls there have fake boobs, nails, eyelashes, eyebrows, lip fillers and tiny waists.
As Katie Hannon found out on Friday's Liveline.
And they wear the smallest itsy-bitsy teeny-weeny bikinis, as the song goes. And I think it's very fake. And they're beautiful girls. I'm not saying anything wrong about the girls themselves, but they don't need to wear all that. They're beautiful looking girls and they don't need all that falseness.
But I wonder though, Jane, has that ship sailed long before Love Island came along? Because if you go on any social media platform, particularly Instagram, you know, that's what young girls are looking like now.
Yeah, and I mean, that girl that commented to the gentleman in Love Island night before, her lips were so obvious that there were fillers in them. The girls today, to me, and the most beautiful teeth. When I was young, I didn't look after my teeth like a lot of people of my age, and they just need that to give them confidence, but that shouldn't be the case.
Right, will you stay there, Jane? I want to bring in Ava Van Rose. Ava, good afternoon.
A woman should have the right to do with her body as she wants, because we are living in an era where feminism is culture. Like, back in that woman's day, with all due respect, and I'm trying to be respectful, but I'm sorry, her views are so dated and old-fashioned. I, myself, I've had 2 breast augmentations, 2 bum augmentations. I've had liposuction. I've had a tummy tuck. I've had veneers. I have fake lips. I have Botox. And guess what? I feel absolutely brilliant about myself, looking at myself in the mirror, knowing that I am a successful mother of 4 children that has made an income based on my appearance. But what if we don't physically feel beautiful? Are we not entitled as women to fix that?
As heard on Friday's Liveline, I leave it with you. Back in a few minutes.
Playback on RTE Radio 1.
Fáilte rás ag an glór. So summer is really here now. The children are off school, Wimbledon is on the TV, and many of us are planning on hitting the road. And what used to be just called going on your holidays to Kerry or some such has now been upcycled by COVID to being a staycation. And staycations come in many forms. For some, it's time to go fishing.
The charm of fishing is that it's the pursuit of the elusive but attainable. It's a perpetual series of occasions of hope, and I think that's what sums up fishing.
For others, it's all about heading off to the Gaeltacht with their teenage dreams packed in their bags.
Did you enjoy Irish college when you were young? The bread, the jam, the tea, the company, the sea air, the lovely sleeps from the Connemara day out on the beach, the rinka, the halaenia, the sweaty hand-holding for the manky dancing that just wasn't going to do anything for anyone.
And for others,
Yes, I saw lots of camper vans. My kids and I actually enjoy trying to spot them on our travels.
On Wednesday's Drive Time, John Cook spoke to some holidaymakers, or staycationers as we call them now, to find out more about the joys of camper van living.
Maybe it's just me looking on enviously and longing for carefree days or memories I have of travelling round the Australian coast. But on the other hand, I'm held back. Should I join the campervan club again? Because it costs a lot and I'm a bit afraid the kids might not sleep the night. So I was very interested to meet Wicklow mother Isolt Ní Gearált on her way to Kerry today. She and her three kids are on the road for a month. Her husband will join them on days off from his work back in Wicklow. And Isolt told me that, like me, she always wanted a campervan.
I say I've wanted a camper for about 10 years. We've just decided to go for it and get it this year. Now, we probably paid over the odds that you would normally because everybody wants a camper van.
They're hard to get, aren't they?
No.
This is Shawnee. He loves the camper too.
And how many does it sleep?
It's a six berth, but okay. It wouldn't be six adults. It's like okay for two adults and, you know,
what
slowly.
Do you think, Shawnee?
Do you love it?
Yeah.
Who do you share the bed with?
Navy and Moomoo.
His two sisters, they all share one room.
Does everyone sleep the night in it?
Yeah, not a bother. It's deadly, yeah. And I do wish that there was more facilities made, obviously, for campers and stuff, because obviously if you go over to the continent, it's far better.
Would you just park on the side of the road, or if you came to a nice beauty spot like this along the sea?
I mean, I would. I'd be conscious that obviously, like if there were signs up saying not to and stuff, we'd adhere to that. If there isn't, and if you're kind of going by the thing of leaving no trace, I don't see what the issue is.
So you're being responsible. You're cleaning up after yourself.
Yeah. And I wouldn't, if I was on the side of the road, I wouldn't be getting, you know, deck chairs out and things like that. But I don't think that there's an issue with people parking. You know, you stick to the one night and then you move on thing. And I don't think there should be a problem with
that.
Do
you feel welcome pulling in somewhere? Or have you had any?
No, the only issues I've had is trying to manoeuvre and park myself. But that's about it. That they're my own driving issues. But like, no.
So would you recommend a camper van if you can get one?
Highly recommend it to any family. I mean, the kids just love it. And like, look, it's been raining for the last few days, but I don't even think they've noticed. It is a good one. It's a good one. It is.
Enjoy your holidays.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
A very happy bunch of camper vanners there. Meanwhile, earlier on Today with Claire Byrne, they too were discussing the joys of downtime. In this case, the joy of fishing.
Good morning, Claire. I grew up in Kinsale. So yes, I mean, fishing has been part of my life since I was about 7 years of age.
Usually consultant geriatrician Professor Ronan Collins is on the airwaves discussing policy and his patients. But to talk to Claire, he donned his waders and discussed his favourite hobby, fishing.
And I think we're uniquely based in Ireland. We're very fortunate to have such a brilliant coastline, fabulous lakes and fabulous rivers. But the one point I would make about fishing is that I think we've underdeveloped our potential, really, for angling in this country. We haven't treated our rivers in the way we should have done. I think the enforcement of our laws around fishing needs a lot to be desired as well. It has huge potential to create employment. They always say, for example, that one salmon that is caught on a rod and line is worth about somewhere between 7,000 and 8,000 euro to the Irish economy, as opposed to one that's poached.
Okay. And do you eat what you catch, Ronan?
Increasingly, I very rarely take a fish now, to be honest. Anglers are increasingly aware of conservation. So particularly with species like salmon, there's a lot of catch and release. And I would only take a fish that I'm, you know, definitely going to eat. I think when you start off fishing, everybody wants to catch as many as you can. And then you go through a phase of trying to catch really big fish. And then I think people actually challenge themselves by trying to catch the most difficult fish by the most difficult means possible. Salmon fishing kind of fits that bill, because you're trying to get a fish that is not eating at all to snap at a lure that doesn't represent anything in nature.
Making it hard for yourself.
Exactly. and I have many, many days of frustration, particularly this year. But I think you mentioned about wellness and getting out into the environment. I think, as one person said to me, I don't go fishing to find myself, I go to lose myself. And, you know, to appreciate nature around you and just, you know, still yourself down and to enjoy the beauty of nature and the motion of what you're doing and the appreciation of the environment.
But while Ronan Collins is clearly having a ball out there fishing and delighted to see the fish, in the interest of balance, we should find out what the fish think when they see him or any other fisherman or woman coming.
Did you ever wonder, Derek, can that fish down there in the river, can it actually see you?
Terry Flanagan was on Mooney Goes Wild on Sunday evening, and he spoke with impressive passion and enthusiasm about fish.
You know, you're standing up here and you're looking down at him, and he's looking, he sees this big ugly fella there. He doesn't know his name is Derek Mooney, but
no,
he sees
Terry
this
Flanagan,
big ugly...
speak for yourself. How dare I? You, I mean.
Well, but can he see you? And the answer is yes. He can. He can see you. So all fish looking up towards the surface, what do they see? They see this round hole of light. This is known in physics as Snell's window, and it's to do with the way that the light is being refracted when it hits the water. Refraction now is different to reflection. Reflection is when light hits something like a mirror and it bounces backwards. Refraction is to do with the bending of light as it goes from one medium to another. The simplest example I can think of, you have a glass of water on the desk there in front of you, which you normally do, take a pencil, stick the pencil into it, and you'll see that the pencil bends. Well, actually, it doesn't bend. It's the light that's bending. But you need to be quiet because they can still sense your vibrations, Terry.
Terry Flanagan there on Mooney Goes Wild. And of course, we all understand that getting out into nature and just trying to get some of that sweet, fresh air into our lungs can really help with our mental health as we endure the seemingly never-ending era of COVID. And the concerns around mental health and the way we're coping with things was a recurring theme this week, as we heard so much about the impact that it's having in the home.
Dear David and Avie, my teenage son has a problem with his body image. He says he hates himself and that he's too thin.
And how the state is trying to grapple with it all.
There's actually 1,000 organisations that claim that they're working for, you know, mental health.
1,000 organisations?
Yes.
Minister of State for Mental Health, Mary Butler there, as heard on Ray Darcy on Tuesday. And we'll come back to that interview in a minute. But first, listeners to Clare Byrne were invited to submit their questions to regular experts, Dr David Coleman and dietitian Avian Bannon, to get help about eating disorders in particular.
He's obsessed with certain foods. To get as much protein as possible, he tends to eat one food non-stop. The biggest problem is he won't talk to us. He won't eat meals with us. He's cut himself off. He says, I'm a bad mother for not giving him enough protein. He wants meat at every meal and also outside of meals. He gets angry and aggressive if he's asked to help around the house. And I'm now giving him whatever he asks for, even though it seems like a crazy diet. Because he gets so angry and aggressive, it's not worth it. What should I do?
This would be very, very typical and among kind of boys or teens, because obviously eating disorders can happen to boys just as well as girls. And there's a very much a focus on this kind of perception that if I have more protein, I will grow faster, grow muscles faster and develop faster. So what we would see with that would be kind of muscle dysmorphia and then overdoing protein. Often with boys like that, it might be best even to try and say, bring him to a sports dietitian. Work on, we're going to help get you the sports help that you need to do this. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to help educate them as much as possible and understand they need a balanced diet to help.
I think from my perspective, certainly I'd be looking at, well, what's going on in terms of the dynamic between the mum and the son? Because there's very definitely something about power within that. So the push to start to do something about it will probably have to happen with the mum first. But she may well want to talk to someone like me, you know, a psychologist, because, you know, they really need to think about, well, you know, how can they begin to work together? She needs to feel like she's not in conflict with them, that she's not fighting with them, but actually that she's able to support them.
Dr. David Coleman and dietitian Avian Bannon on with Clare on Monday. And then on Tuesday, Ray Darcy welcomed the Minister of State for Mental Health and Older People, Mary Butler, into studio 1 year on from her appointment in this role. He wanted to discuss the challenges for services. It's a cause close to Ray's heart. And in the middle of a wide-ranging discussion, eating disorders here too came up for mention.
And the fact that you are not at the cabinet table.
No.
That's...
Yeah, there's 15 seats at the cabinet table.
But it's not that much a priority then, is it?
But yeah. Look, the one thing we have to look at, the one thing COVID has done, it has shone a huge spotlight on mental health.
Yes.
And that we're moving away from the stigma.
I'm very aware, acutely aware, that you've come to this in the last year. Mm. But people have been talking about the mental health for the last 10 years.
Absolutely,
you know what I mean?
And longer.
My worry always, it was like shaking the bushes. You know, we were shaking the bushes and people were coming out. And then when they came out, they looked around.
Mm.
And in a lot of cases, the services were lacking. And that's dangerous, if you know.
As I said, we started to prepare last year because we had to move very quickly to this blended approach. So there's an awful lot of people availing of supports now online that never happened before. It doesn't suit everybody. But on top of that, for example, when I came into office, what I was very much aware of were eating disorders. I was appalled to see that the funding that had been provided for eating disorders hadn't been spent the way it should have been spent in 2018 and 2019. So I reinstated that 3.94 million this year. We currently have 3 eating disorder teams which have been fully populated, and we'll have another 3 by the end of the year, but we need to get to 16. So this year there'll be 49 new whole-time equivalent staff in eating disorder
which
teams.
Which is good news for families who are affected by that. Can I ask you why it's so important to you?
I suppose I'm conscious of a couple of people that eating disorders and self-harm is a huge issue. So last year, again, we had 486 admissions into under 18 CAMHS for eating disorders. So it's an issue that I'm acutely aware of. I know people that that are dealing with eating disorders and self-harm. It is.
Minister of State Mary Butler and Ray Darcy on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, Ray had this conversation with singer Mary Byrne, who didn't hold back in her description of her mental health situation.
Mary is with us now in studio. How are you doing, Mary?
I'm grand today, thank you very much.
Good. Now, that's important, the way you said that.
Yes.
I'm grand today.
Yes. But every day I wake up, I have to convince myself in the morning that I'm okay and that I'm worthy of being here. Right. And it might sound mad to people, but to me it's a norm. And I have to do it. And I stopped doing it for a while and went down a very dark road. So every morning I wake up and the first thing I say is, oh God, get me through today and let me be worthy of what I really am. I get up and I go downstairs and I look in the mirror and I say, you're okay. I have to do it.
Yeah.
It might sound stupid, but to me, it gives me that, I suppose, the energy to go on. Right. You've said now what you have to say. You've put it out there. You know everything is going to be okay. But you also know that there are little fellas in your brain who are telling you different things. So you got to fight them.
Mary Byrne there on Wednesday with Ray Darcy. And as Mary said in her open and frank interview, life can be tough and throws up many challenges. And the challenge of pain and grief were themes on Liveline this week too, as callers on Tuesday to Katie Hannon also spoke frankly and openly about managing grief and death. The conversation took a fascinating view on how having honest chats with loved ones about their wishes for their funerals, for example, can actually help everybody cope better.
Amanda, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
Brendan Grace's daughter, Amanda, joined the conversation with Katie.
We were talking there about funerals and, you know, planning funerals. And I think many people will remember your dad's funeral as something that was so beautiful and touched so many people.
Strange to say it, but it was a highlight, absolutely, and something that gave us great comfort.
And I remember I spoke to your sister on this programme the day after Brendan died. And again, that was a beautiful programme. I'll never forget it. But I was struck that at that stage, the plans were already there.
Oh, yeah. And would you believe it's 2 years exactly today that he just piped up out of the silence and he said, I want to go back to the Liberties. And that's how he started, said, I want to go back to Nicholas of Myra, the guards out on the bikes, no flowers. And he just started talking and I just whipped out my notebook and I started writing it all down for him. He had a vision. He wasn't giving me a list. He was actually playing it in his mind, telling me how the day was going to go.
And how were you with that, Amanda?
It was a relief, to be honest, because it spoke into that silence. We all knew what was coming. So then all the notes were taken and we knew exactly what to do. And it was a real gift to give us the opportunity to carry out his wishes. You know, he wasn't afraid of dying, to be honest. He was going out the way he lived.
More loving words spoken too about family loss on Monday's Morning Ireland, as Mary Wilson discussed the Irish Film and Television Awards ceremony, which took place virtually over the weekend, and how for one winner's family, it was a poignant win.
On behalf of our family, this is the ultimate bittersweet occasion for us.
Barry McGuigan there, and the McGuigan family lost their beautiful daughter Nika to cancer, and here her heartbroken parents, Barry and Sandra, gave this tribute during the ceremony.
For Nika to receive such a remarkable achievement following years of hard work, it is eclipsed only by our sadness that Nika is not here to receive this award. Nika was a fighter from the day she was born, and she comes from a long line of strong female role models. This is a testament to the special and sacred bond that Nika had with her mum that transcends all of life's challenges.
To all of the actors that have been nominated tonight, I mean, for Nika to actually be given this award is just, it would take her breath away, quite literally. And for me and Barry, I would just like to say that it was an absolute privilege that she was our daughter. Thank you, IFTA. Thank you, everybody.
Sandra McGuigan and Barry McGuigan accepting that posthumous award to their daughter, Nika McGuigan, who won Lead Actress in Film Award at the IFTAs last night for her performance in Wildfire.
The McGuigan family there, clearly so proud of their wonderful daughter, Nika. Meanwhile, on Ryan Tuberty's show on Wednesday morning, more pride too for a son, in this case, Jason.
Let me talk to Jason. Jason, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Ryan.
Very nice to talk to you.
Jason, who has graduated from NUI Galway, talked to Ryan about his academic achievement.
You're Jason Sherlock, correct?
Yeah, from Galway, not the Gaelic player.
Exactly. You're studying in Galway.
Yeah, I just completed an undergraduate degree in economics, sociology and politics, and I'm intending to do a master's in international finance. I picked economics and politics because, I just want to understand the world better and I want to improve it and all that.
Jason is clearly an excellent student, but as a member of the Irish traveller community, as he went on to tell Ryan, it certainly hasn't been easy, as less than 1% of his community actually get the chance to go to college.
Primary school good?
I was very positive in primary school. But kind of went downhill for me, I suppose, at secondary school. I felt a bit excluded, I suppose, because I had a lot of traveller friends, just say, in first year. But as time went on, there's less dropping out. In the Leaving Cert, I was the only traveller in my year. I had other friends, but I just felt a bit different. The teachers in my school are extremely supportive. They're very helpful, but I didn't really come out with my identity in secondary school. And the friends that I have at the time, they might have said a kind of racist joke or something about travellers, but they didn't know I was a traveller. So I was just I suppose I kind of felt a bit uttered kind of from that perspective.
You said you didn't come out as a traveller. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it sounds a bit weird, I suppose. But
it doesn't sound weird at all. I actually do kind of get the gist of what it is, but I'd love to know your thoughts behind it.
Yeah, I suppose coming out, I suppose this is saying your identity and all that, because I suppose when I was growing up, I might hear a lot of racist remarks or negative stereotypes or stuff like that. And so I just felt like I couldn't come out and say I was a traveller because of that. I thought I'd get treated differently. And I don't know, I thought some people were my friends, but then they were saying negative stuff like that. And I was just... I was kind of uttered about that, I suppose.
But barriers to education and progress are no strangers to some. 2 years ago, the writer Kit Duval edited a collection called Common People, an anthology of working class writers, and one of the contributors was Paul McVeigh. Now Paul has edited an entirely Irish anthology, a sister publication to it called The 32.
They did an open call for the working class writers who were emerging.
And Paul joined Sean Rocks in the Arena studio along with Kit Duval, and they quickly got on to discussing how Paul even started by inviting potential contributors.
And, I didn't want to say, this is what working class is. There is no test for what makes you working class. And I think if I had come up with my own rules, I'd have gotten a thorough beating, by people for saying, well, who do you think you are coming up with your rules for what makes working class? So I let people self-define, one, trusting that no one's going to lie about it, but also, at the end of the day, if you're working class, you know it, let me tell you. And if by some weird cushioned life that you've led that you didn't realize that somebody else will tell you or some barrier will be putting your way through life that will soon let you know that being working class is what you are.
The barrier aspect is perhaps one of the interesting aspects of that answer there that you give us. But Kit, you have quite a broad church in your mind when it comes to working class, and it's not always defined in terms of, to put it simply, amounts of money.
No, absolutely, because there's a lot of gentry in the UK who live on next to nothing, but they're most definitely upper class. So it's not just about the amount of money that comes into the household. It's definitely about your education. It's about where your parents came from, where they work. And just like Paul said, the best thing to do with issues of who and who isn't working class is to let people decide for themselves. I lead a quite middle class life now. But I would never say that I'm middle class, because where I came from was most definitely a working class, if not under working class community. And those sorts of things that happen to you when you're young and what defines you, it never really leaves you. I will be working class, till the day I die. That's just the way it is.
From Arena on Tuesday. And The 32 is published by Unbound Press. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Bigi Lynn again, Cúpla an Ómad.
Playback on RTE Radio 1.
Foil to a rash. Now, if you can unscramble the following phrase correctly, then you may be planning to spend a long evening in front of the TV tomorrow night. Coming, it's home. It's been an exciting few weeks at the Euros football tournament, and the build-up to the final in Wembley tomorrow night between host country England and visitors Italy is certainly grabbing the attention.
They dare to dream that it could be coming home after 55 years.
Wednesday night's semi-final was a nail-biting affair for English supporters, as reporter Killian Sherlock demonstrated on Thursday's Morning Ireland.
What a moment for Kane and England. Semi-final of the European Championship. Harry Kane against Kasper Schmeichel. Saves! Scored!
I'm so excited, I'm so excited.
There's still 15 minutes to go though.
Exactly, no look, I'm not getting ahead of myself, look. Listen mate, listen, it's our moment, it has to be.
15 minutes left, are you nervous?
I'm an England fan mate, we're always nervous. We always blow it mate, we always blow it.
But now there's a whistle and it's the final whistle and Gareth Southgate has done it. It was a long time coming, but they're back in a final again. And back in a final at Wembley.
It's coming home! Football's coming home!
Give me your reaction to the match.
All I can say is it's coming home. England! Who are ya?
What did you make of the boys in Southgate? Are you delighted?
Oh, I tell you what, it was a brilliant game. Fair play to Denmark, but what can I say? England all the way!
But England marching onto the final with such confidence has caused more than a few winces here at home.
I asked people who support England to win the Euros to get in touch, and I think I've started something that I may not be able to finish. Come on, England, I'd love to see them win it 1966 style, from John, a Dundalk Irishman. I want England to win on Sunday, says another. I was delighted they won. Why not? Now, Mick in Lucan then says, England lost any neutral support from the get-go last night when a very large number, not a few, England supporters booed the Danish anthem. Why is this behaviour not condemned more vociferously by commentators? An email from Stephen. The bitterness from the jealous Irish is hilarious. Come on, England. I remember the English getting behind the Irish, says Stephen, in the 1994 World Cup. Never again, he says.
Claire Byrne there reading some comments from Thursday's programme, but it seemed that everybody had an opinion on this.
Now, the front page of this morning's Irish Independent tells us that a flood of nasty inflation price hikes are set to hit consumers over the summer. To tell us more, I'm joined by Charlie Weston, personal finance editor with the Irish Independent. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Claire.
Did you watch the match?
I did indeed, yes. Yeah.
And you want England to win, do you, at the weekend?
No, as the grandson of a 1916 veteran, I couldn't be seen.
Oh, come on, it's a football match. It's a football match, Charlie.
It was never a penalty, Claire. It was never a penalty.
Financial journalist Charlie Weston even getting involved in Claire Byrne on Thursday. But what is our problem with supporting our nearest neighbours?
It still continues to puzzle and amuse me to see how people respond to England winning football.
Ryan Tuberty wondered this too on Thursday.
We are so conflicted, and the same people who support Everton and Chelsea and Liverpool and Man City and Man United and on and Accrington Stanley, the same people then find themselves cheering for Denmark and now Italy. And you think, what happened? And then I hear other things like, they seem like such a nice team, but the fans are a pain in the... Well, they're not all painful, our English friends living in Ireland, having the time of their lives. We would do the exact same, and our papers would be exactly chock full if it was us. And worse, we're still talking about Italia 90. Who are we to talk?
And later that day on Liveline, emotions were running high as callers discussed it with Katie Hannan.
Louise Hassan.
How are you doing, Katie? How are you?
How does that make you feel, Louise?
Oh, so good. Brilliant. First final of an English football final in my lifetime, and I'm 52.
Yeah, it's a really, really big deal for
big deal.
Any English person, yeah. Anywhere in the world. But you're in our part of the world, Louise. And
unfortunately, yeah.
You think that is unfortunate?
Yeah, and I've lived here 20 years and supported every Irish team that plays, but none of my friends wanted England to win last night, like Raheem Sterling dive. But that's what the ref and VAR is there for. And, you know, an Irish striker, they're not going to pick the ball up, give it back to the opposing team and say, sorry, mate, you got it wrong. When it comes to sport, like in England, it's like we don't support them. It's like, oh, 800 years of oppression. And I get all of that. And I'm just like, oh, my God, it's football. Like on Sunday, I'd really love to go out with my England shirt on and put my England flag on the balcony and just really enjoy the day. And I just couldn't.
Louise there talking to Katie Hannan about home and the power of home. And one woman who knows all about the power of home is Vicky Phelan.
Well, now, my next guest this morning has been given the all clear by her doctors to come home to Ireland next week.
Vicky has been over in America for months now undergoing grueling cancer treatment. She spoke to Miriam McCallaghan on Sunday as she prepared to pack her bags to come home.
Everyone's going to be so happy to hear you're coming home. But how much are you looking forward to seeing them all, particularly your children, Amelia and Dara?
Oh, Lord, there'll be tears, Miriam, I know that much. I mean, I'm already emotional even thinking about it because it's so long since I've seen them. I really didn't think when I came out here in January that it would be 6 months before I'd see my children. I honestly thought that they'd be able to come out. You know, looking back, if I had known back in January that none of my family would have been able to travel out at all, I don't know would I have come out, really, to be quite honest, you know.
Now, I gather you've a lot of Irish people in DC helping you out while you've been there. Were these people you knew before you travelled, Vicky?
Not at all. No, I knew nobody coming over here. Not one single person. They all reached out to me kind of after I was on the Late Late Show. I got tons of messages on Messenger and Instagram. And like one of the first people that contacted me was Geraldine. And I met her the first week I was here. She came in 2 days later, handed me a new phone and said, there you go, you know, with the number. She didn't know me from Adam. Do you know what I mean? And Sarah Surgener, I was out with her last night. She came in and literally did my shopping and filled my fridge and bought me a kettle because they don't do, you know, nobody has an electric kettle over here. Just little things like that that make all the difference to you and make you feel at home.
Vicky Phelan there talking to Miriam on Sunday.
At one stage, during a 5K restriction, I was on a Zoom meeting with a women's group in Donegal.
Earlier that morning on Sunday Miscellany, home too was on their minds.
During the conversation, one woman said, I can't wait until I'm able to go home. There was a silence for a moment, as those who knew her for years looked at the screen. If we'd been in a room together, everyone would have been staring at her. So she laughed and said, I know this is home. But I mean, I want to go home, to Belfast. She had been living for over 40 years in Donegal, but still, there was a yearning to go to her home place, or as she called it, home. I understood what she was saying. In a time of uncertainty, she missed her childhood place, where her growing memories began. After she spoke, each woman, in turn, instinctively spoke about what home meant to them. There's a great gift in having had a place and people that gave a warm grounding to our lives. For me, home is definitely where we live in Donegal. I've said often, especially after 2020, that if I didn't live in Donegal, I would want to live in Donegal. During my childhood, we lived in a few different places, but home, for me, is a two-story house on Bonnyview Avenue outside Cleveland, Ohio. White cladding, a front porch, basement and attic spaces, the distinct smells, yeast bread baking, cinnamon toast, meatloaf, the music, Engelbert Humperdinck, the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makem, Johnny Cash, Glen Campbell, the sound of a cargo train on the railway tracks further up our road, or cars driving on the brick cobbled street, my mother reading our nighttime stories, my father's corny jokes. Home.
Denise Blake there with home from Sunday Miscellany. And now it's time for me to pack up and go home. And to end, I think there's only one tune we can play.
Okay, the whole of England is with you.
Kidding. Let's end on Paul Brady, the homes of Donegal, as heard on Sunday Miscellany.
Paul Brady with the Homes of Donegal ending playback, which was presented and compiled by Evelyn O'Rourke. And if you hear a standout moment in RT Radio 1 during the week, which you'd like to savour again on Saturday, why not suggest that it gets a replay by emailing playback@rte.ie.